So the questions the questions we have were some. We'll start with the questions that were submitted, and we'll go from there. And we asked Mr. Kajash Khan to moderate some of the questions. I, after seeing the shir, I think he didn't know what he was getting into moderating.
Before we formally start, I've been going to the Kol events for about 15 years, or as Rabbi Singer said. I went to the dinners and to the sivas, but I was never in the belly of the beast like we are here now. And it's really, I really enjoyed it. It was very energizing, and I want to thank everybody who organized it. I saw in the emails Rabbi Blezer, Rabbi Singer, Rabbi Pavalsky, Rabbi Parsons. Just a couple words before this started, Nicole was nice enough to send me a video of what a moderator does. They wanted to make sure that I keep to the rules. They sent me a very specific video with Rabbi Lapiansky, a bit of this moderator. And there was also people in the Kehila that gave me advice. One person said that I should be hard on the Rabbanim if they try to wiggle out of an answer or try to dodge a question. I should use my deposition skills. But I told them that seeing the dizzying use of Aramaic and axioms from Gemara and Hebrew, I understand that he who controls language controls the conversation. So I'm not going to do that unless it gets really out of hand. So what was this? So the video, what I learned from the video is this. Since I obviously don't know a lot of halacha, and I know even less gaisha law, as Rabbi Blezer likes to call it, no one's here to listen to me. But if you could indulge me, I kind of wanted to share with you how I ended up here, how I kind of rode a wave, and as usual, my modus operandi is to do as little as possible, and still I ended up here. It started with my partner, Bob Stock. He walked into my office in the summer, and he says, Josh, I have an idea. Our law firm has many from Shomer Shabbos Balabat attorneys, and we should promote that in the community for people who want their disputes resolved through halacha, or wants their contracts created with an eye towards halacha. And I told him, that's a great idea. It's a really great idea. So then what did I do? Nothing. I thought about it for a little bit, and I said, okay, yeah, it's a great idea. And then, so he comes back into my office about 2 weeks later. He says, Josh, remember that idea I told you about promoting Bate Dinim and with all the from attorneys? I said, yeah, I remember that idea. Great idea. He says, I heard that there's this great scholar in North Miami Beach, Rabbi Blezer, who's been trying to educate the community on the advantages of Beis Din, how it's quicker, more cost-effective, and it's actually the right thing to do. I heard also he's preparing just in case the Sanhedrin comes back for the time of Mashiach. No, that I made up. I don't want the call that they're preparing for Mashiach. But so I said, oh, Rabbi Blezer, I know Rabbi Blezer. It's a great idea. I live in his community, and I learn with him sometimes. It's a great idea. What did I do? Nothing. I thought about it for a day or two. I said, okay, if I see Rabbi Blezer by a wedding, or maybe when we learn, come El, I'll mention it to him. So then who calls me, like, literally a day or two later? Rabbi Blezer. He calls me up and says, Josh, remember we spoke a while back about Choshen Mishpat and you want to promote Bate Dinim? I said, yeah. He says, okay, let's put something together. So really, and then I ended up here. I didn't really do much, as you can tell from my story. So anyways, I thought that was just an interesting Ashkocha Pratis. How kind of I rode a wave and I didn't really do much. But okay, now on to the questions. I would just ask from the Kehila that everybody here is very there's Zrizim and they want to answer the questions, but let's at least give the Rabbanim the first chance at the questions. It reminds me of the old story that I think the Brisker Rav, he was once sitting with a bunch of people in front of him, and some person came and asked him like a bomb question, and he sits there and he thinks. And he says, like a good chacham, he says, I don't know. I don't know. So one of the people sitting there says, I also don't know. I also don't know. So anyway, the Mavin Yavin. So the first question, let's see. I've been told, Rabbi Blezer again, he gave me strict rules. He wrote down the questions even for me to write, for me to say. But I'm going to start with, who are we starting with? Oh, Mansoor. this is a question. Okay. So we learn today and yesterday about all these very intricate laws of ribbis, and that if you don't keep by them, you get no olam haba, you lose all your nechassim. So, it's kiss amazing. I'm sorry, it's kiss amazing, even worse. So the question is, though, isn't it then better to do business with goyim? It's better, there's less pitfalls, and so we should stop doing business with Jews, even though we're told always to do business with Jews. But it's much easier to do it with goyim, where you don't have to worry about this stuff.
I mean, I don't think there's a mitzvah to dispel the question. The question assumes that I'm going to answer, no. You have to do business with Jews, because I don't think that necessarily has to be the answer. I think in certain cases, person knows himself. I don't think the mitzvah of doing business with Jews, if a person is going to run into major pitfalls with all this, especially if he didn't learn Hoshe Mishpat, if he doesn't know all the laws, I mean, he might be better off doing business with a Jew, so he's not over Isure Doraita every single day. And that might give him a motivation to learn the laws. That might give him a certain... But I think if a person is going in without knowing Hoshe Mishpat, he might be... with all the respect to Tzadikima, but he might be better off, bypassing it until he knows.
Okay, so your position would be to do business with Gaim until you learn Halacha.
No, my position would be learn
Halacha so you can do it with
Jews. Then come back and ask me the question. I don't think the question is, before you start learning Hoshe Mishpat, what do you tell the guy? Yeah, do it Jews and roll dice. Yeah, sometimes you're going to be, sometimes you won't, and whatever it is, but just do business with Jews. I think that's because of nefesh.
Do any of the other rabbanim want to chime in on this one? Or
when you discuss ribbis specifically, I'm not going to give a general cloud. Ribbis specifically, the answer would be, it depends. If you're dealing with not religious Jews, the answer is 1,000,000%. In the finance industry, it has to be avoided. They're not going to sign a het iska, and if they do sign a het iska, they don't know what it means. And it definitely is not going to be, it's usually not going to be valid, because it's not going to be tonight to go to Beis Din, and they're not going to go to Beis Din. If you're dealing with religious Yidden, the question is it's not true. You can write a Het Iska, and it can be valid, and both sides should understand what a Het Iska is, and then it's a Chetchila. So it depends. I mean, that's Negev for many, many things. When we're discussing businesses that sometimes have to run on Shabbos, and you're taking a partner, you want to know if it should be an irreligious Jew or a Gentile. And it's 100%, it has to be a Gentile, right? And when you just look through Shulchan Aruch, when you have Shutvin, it's like a question, when I sell my Chumash, should I sell it to a Jew or a Gentile? The answer is you better sell it to a Gentile, right? So it depends what you're talking about. But if you're talking about Shem Torah mitzvahs, and they would keep up the halachas, then I'm not sure if you're insinuating that they won't, but if they will, then 100% you shouldn't be avoided, and then that's a mitzvah, and you'll have, if you're looking to take employees, and employees even sometimes cost more, but you'll see, you'll have siat d'shmaya, and it'll be your company will be a klimachzik bracha that will be able to pay these employees what they living wages in the front community requires.
So there seems to be an agreement of the rabbanim to you want to weigh in on this one, or you want me to go to the next one, whatever.
Just to weigh in for it. So let me just to compliment what both the rabbanim said. I just want to. Point out the Gemara that, I don't know if it came out in the Shir in the past couple of days, the Gemara does say that at one stage Chazal actually made an Isser on collecting ribbis from a non-Jew. For what reason? Chazal were very, very motivated to keep us separate from the Goyim for many reasons. And many, many of the Gzeiras Derabanan are designed against too much interaction with Goyim. You can't even make an Eruv with a Goy, so that hopefully you'll just move out and see it's too difficult to live here, etc., etc. So I agree 100% with what was said, that sometimes if it's imperative, you have no choice. But at the same time, I think in a little sense, the question could be rephrased as, I find it very difficult to find, there's so many halachas, so many things I'm constantly stumbling. Why is it that I make a bracha every morning, shalom asani goy? I mean, I might have been better off the other way if I could avoid all. So obviously, no one in this world would dream of asking such a question. It's a challenge, and it's a lifetime involvement, but it's something that we have to bite the bullet and deal with it and realize all the benefits and all the godliness of it and all the what it brings. So at the same time, while of course, one has to be very careful in what the Rabbanim mentioned, but as Rabbi Mansour mentioned, the idea of learning the halachas and making sure that you know how to do business with a Jew is the answer, and taking the challenge and figuring out the right way and constantly seeking guidance, even when you know the halachas, like guidance from Rebbeim, come to Shirim such as this, and figure out how to do it the right way. And then when you have a specific shaila, in this particular case, can selling my chametz in a chanami, or if anything else falls into that category, in a chanami. But derech klal, of course, our goal should be to be able to integrate, socialize, and do business with our brethren as much as possible.
Okay, very good. I'll keep with you if it's okay, Rabbi Friedman. This is the next question. That it says many offices are open places, but oftentimes, especially if we're going to, as I said, many times offices are open places, but if we're going to listen to the advice of Rabbi Mansour, we're going to stay late and we're gonna work hard. And then it could be faced with a situation. Oh, just on time, fine. It could be that we're faced with problems of yichud, with a secretary, something like that. So what's a good eitzah for people dealing with those potential issues?
Okay, so you mentioned I should.
Yeah.
Okay, so there isn't one answer that could address all the situations. Obviously, a person who is in a situation where he finds a possible question of yichud should ask. And again, here's a case where a person has to be familiar with the basic halachas of hilchas yichud to know when to ask a shayla, what's a shayla, and you know, and what's not. But when a person has a shayla, he has to ask. One thing just to mention, that with today's workplace, it's extremely common that there are going to be security cameras, and if there's a camera with a live stream, that may be an eitzah. Meaning, if you have somebody who you know is watching or could be watching at any time, not just the camera that's there in order to ward off certain things, but a camera that's actually there because there's somebody that cares. Like, you'll have some offices where there's a board in front of many offices, there's a board in front in the main office, and they're watching all over the building at any time. So that could be a bit of a hatzala. It's a sense like a Pesach Pesuach, that you're constantly being supervised. Or a person could maybe set that up use his own device and have his wife tuning in at any given time. And many poskim say that will work to mitigate the yichud issues. Now, again, this is not supposed to be a halacha shir, so we're not saying halacha lemaisa, yes or no, exactly, but this is something that a person could inquire. In general, though, what I find is many of the shailas of yichud go beyond technical yichud, beyond what says in Shulchan Aruch Eben Ezer, but they get into more broad shailas of tznius, of hanhaga, of what's roy, what's not roy. Many times people ask me, well, my wife's going out of town, and I have a female boarder, is it okay if I have this child, this one? So your wife's going out of town, and you have a female boarder, whatever it is, that's not right. Stop right there. Find her another place for one night. It's just not the right thing to do, whether hilchas yichud is the deterrent or not. And I think that's what we have to take into consideration here too, that it's not just the technical yichud shaila which has to be asked, but it's, even if we get beyond that, is that secretary there every day when you're there, and very often the two of you alone, and maybe she's, you know, we don't have to take it any further, but that's something that has to be given consideration.
Just one follow-up, and you can answer this to the other rabbanim. At what point does being friendly become being flirty? At what point should we be careful?
I'll take. You want to speak?
I don't.
Okay. A few things I want to say.
At what point does being friendly with a secretary or something like that become flirty? That it goes beyond the line.
I'm going to speak for me and Rabbi Mansour. I want to say a few things. This is general about tznius, and what I've noticed when people call is the ruach is a question. I'm just going to say it quickly. I'm just going to say it quickly.
It is too loud.
So then shut the AC. So Rabbi Sack, someone called me. Someone called me, and he works in Manhattan. He's an accountant. And he's a friend of mine from Yeshiva, Ben Torah. And he was careful not to shake hands with a woman. And, you know, Stifel holds shaking hands as Yarek Bal Yabra, others are Meikel. But Ben Torah tried not to shake hands with women. And he told me, he wasn't shaking hands. And he's like a very proper guy. And he said it's becoming so socially awkward for him. His whole day is revolving about what angle he's in and where he's going to be and who's going to be. And he can't go on like this. And he asked me, he asked me to call my father-in-law, Shlomo Miller, and he's like, I need a hetzer. I can't go on like this anymore. I said, if you're going to have to call someone else, this is not, he's not going to give you a hat. He said, no, but he's this fellow's from Toronto. He says, I would trust him. Can you call him? And my father told me as follows, and it's 100% true, and I see it all the time. Many times, you know, he doesn't want to be in a social awkward situation. Many times, people, when they have tsnius, I'm discussing tsnius in general, when they have these tsnius issues, and they say it's awkward because it's awkward to them. They are uncomfortable with it, which means as follows. We are Bnei Torah, we are Yidden, we have our own code, we are Meleches Kohanim Goy Kodesh, and we have boundaries. And people have to be proud of those boundaries. And when he says it's uncomfortable not to shake a hand, he kind of finds it primitive. He looks at it like this is a little backwards. And he's not comfortable with it. But when you are comfortable with it, there's nothing to be awkward about. Now, in general, I'm discussing shaking hands. I understand when someone sticks out your hand, you can be a little, and if you don't prepare, then suddenly you find your hand out, because that's the way people don't want to snub people. And I recommend you go in front of a mirror, and I'm a joke, and practice. What are you going to say when someone shakes your hand? It, to the point where you have it down, and it's smooth. But the point is, the hashkafa should be, is that sneeze issues for Yidden is not awkward. And you look what's going on in the Goyish Welt, where the liberals completely removed all the boundaries, and it's complete chaos. And they want to know, why are men behaving like this? And the answer is, because there are no boundaries. And there's nothing wrong with us having boundaries. There's nothing wrong. And a person has to be proud of those boundaries. And when you are proud of them, people respect you for it. Because it should be respected. You know, and you say, I'm not shaking your hand because you're a woman. My wife doesn't shake hands with a man. It's nothing to do with men or women. You understand? We have loyalty to my spouse, and that's it. And we have boundaries, and there's nothing wrong with that. Now, Benegia, relationships in the office, and I tell these people all the time, in a gay yichud, you know, there's a heter in yichud called Baal Be'ir, right, if the husband's in the city. You lose that heter when it's libe gaspoy, when you're somewhat friendly. What's the line? I think the line is, you don't call someone by their first name. And people think, well, that's a chinyakta thing. Well, it could be it's chinyak, but la halacha, I think you lose that heter of Baal Be'ir, because why call someone by their first name? If you call someone the first name, it's friendly. And when you call someone by their formal name, Mrs. So-and-so, it's formal, and the relation should be formal. So if you want to know what crosses the line, I think what crosses the line is calling people by their first name. And he agrees.
I'll just sum it up. I don't think we have any argument on this. First of all, I think HaKadosh Baruch Hu reset a lot of the world. Well, they don't have too much problem with shaking hands now because we have the COVID excuse now.
Oh,
so we're all out now, you know, the COVID. I'm not vaccinated, okay. You know, it used to be when somebody sneezed, they used to say, Haim Tovim. Now they say, Yibach Shemo. So I think that can bring us back. You always have that excuse. There's a famous story, to the rabbi's point, that we have to be proud of our gedarim and our siyagim. Rav Mordechai Eliyahu, alav shalom, the former chief rabbi of Israel, if I'm not mistaken, met with the Queen of England. And the Queen extended her hand to the rabbi, and Rav Mordechai Eliyahu just stood, you know, in place and did not return the hand. And it was in the next page in the London Times, a big picture, and they were criticizing the rabbi. Look at these, you know, barbaric rabbis that come from Israel. No derech eretz, no conduct. The Queen of England, she come extending her hand. Derech eretz. The guy doesn't know simple protocol. Turns out there was a correction that when they looked at the protocols of the Queen, she's not supposed to extend her hand to an Orthodox rabbi. So therefore, actually, she broke the rule on that one. And the rabbi was actually, and they had to make a... take it back in order to say that actually the rabbi was right. But that's actually power. Today, of course, they would look at that move as, you know, look how ethical and look how proper. The Gemara in Ta'anit, which I think is, the Gemara tells us these stories in order that we can learn from them. Otherwise, there's no reason just to tell us stories. The Gemara is not a storybook, obviously. And the Gemara says that there were certain rabbis that used to get the communications from heaven. One rabbi used to get the communication once a year before Yom Kippur. One rabbi would get it once a week, Erev Shabbat. And then there was a doctor. They called him Abba Umana, and he would get a call every day. So the rabbis were shocked. It's a tzaddikim, this guy's a doctor. I mean, there's a Tov Shevarofi, but we know what it says at the end of that Mishnah. But the point is, what did he do with this Abba Umana that he gets such a daily call? And they said because he was a bloodletter, and he knew that some of his patients are going to be, female. So he invented a certain type of sleeve that he could put on the patient, which exposes the minimum amount just to get the needle in there. And he made separate waiting rooms. And because of that, that he had a concern that his office was Sini'ut friendly. That means he was the office manager, he was the doctor, so he set the culture in the office. I mean, look at how much Nahat Ruach that gave HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So, if you're a worker, that's one thing. You really can't set the... But if you're an employer, if you're the boss, so you could be like Abba Umana. You can be able to set certain standards and certain rules in the office in order to make it Sini'ut friendly. And according to that Gemara, that person deserves the highest accolade and respect from Yeshiva Shel Mana.
Very good. I heard a practical advice from someone that you should have if you're expecting a woman at a meeting, to have a cup or something in your hand. Or maybe files, because then that awkwardness doesn't happen.
Yeah, but that's right. Sure, the rabbi was saying that's maybe you're not comfortable.
Okay, but you don't get into an awkward situation. Yeah, I mean,
that's,
I guess you can.
With a kiss. You
shouldn't be. Right.
That works.
Here, Rabbi Kirsha, this is for you. I know this. You might have a bias here because you're a Dayan, but we're told always that machlokas is like fire, and I can tell you from personal experience, it eats people up from the inside. And we're told that being mevater is so important, especially now in preparation for Yom Narayim, that we're supposed to be mavra midasov. And so where is there room for a monetary dispute? At what point does it say, okay, I'm not going to be mevater, I'm actually going to take them to Beis Din? We should just be mevater always and avoid machlokas, no?
No. I do have a bias. When you have a valid tefillah on somebody, a valid taina on somebody, when someone owes you money, you should collect the money. You shouldn't be mevater on that chayv. When you have a valid tefillah on somebody, I don't know why we have to call it machlekes. Not every case is a machlekes. I'm gonna read from a Chazon Ish. I think we once did it here. We once learned the laws of yoyrid l'umnes chaveray, that how a person conducts his business, sometimes the competition is being unfair. And sometimes competition is fair, right? And the Gemara says, if someone comes from a different city, right, and he's selling his goods, but he doesn't belong in this city, the Gemara said that's inappropriate competition. If someone lives in this city, that's appropriate competition. And the Gemara goes through all these cases, people stealing deals, people stealing workers, all these halachas. And the Chazon Ish, this is in Yonah Diyayim, the Chazon Ish has a wonderful piece here in Emunah B'Tochen, and he says, what's going on over here? We know the Rabbeinu Shalom said, Kol Mezayinu Shel Adam is Ketzuf Meil Rosh Hashanah. Whatever he's supposed to make, he's going to make. Whatever he's not supposed to make, he's not going to make. So now, someone came from a different city. So how could he affect you in any way? How could he affect you in any way? So the Chazon Ish says as follows. He says, even though Kol Mezayinu Shel Adam is Ketzuf Meil Rosh Hashanah Ad Yom Kippur, and you can't take away any money if you come from a different city. He says, You understand? So he says as follows. He says, when you have someone who comes and is interfering with your business, he says, now you have a sugya of hachokas nezokin. Someone's damaging you. Al pi shulchan aruch, he's damaging you. Are you allowed to let someone damage you and say, I'm being mevater? And the answer is no. Because if you let someone do that, you're encouraging bad behavior. That's what you're doing. And you're not supposed to encourage bad behavior. If someone's doing something wrong, you have a clear tefillah on him. Clear tefillah. So he says, but what about the fact that Mezayinu Shel Adam is Ketzuvalon? And he says, it is, but you have to go to work. And you have to do a shtadlis. And your shtadlis is to stay in your lane and keep that lane clear. And someone just went into your lane like you're driving on a highway. So what do? You beep. So how do you beep? You take him to Beis Din. And you say, you're in my lane. And there's still no machlokes. You're just letting him know he's in your lane. Now Beis Din is going to rule. Beis Din's going to rule. And Beis Din's going to say, if he's being over, if he's not. Now the Chassid says a wonderful thing. Let's say Beis Din says, nope, he's not being over on the war on the laws of Yoredel Omnis. Are you happy or are you not happy? Says the Chaznish, you're very happy. Now Yechiv Ishtadlus says, leave it. And if not, Yechiv Ishtadlus is to shut him down and you have to follow up, right? It's all about Ishtadlus. And he says, in ze al mitzad ha-mitzius. This is not mitzad the mitzius that you try to save money. It's all Yechiv Ishtadlus. You understand? Now, with that said, there are times when there's interpersonal disputes and it could be involved in families. It can be involved in close neighbors. People have different tainas. If you go to Beis Din, you might win because maybe you're machzik in the money, even though the person has tainas. So, in such a case, you want to know if you should be mevater? Of course you should try to be mevater. It's different cases. If someone is wronging you, really, really wronging you, then and a person should be a shmater, that's wrong. So ultimately, I'm not avoiding your question. I'm saying it depends on the thing. You know, this summer, there was a fellow in the bungalow colony with me, a very, very wealthy Yid, and he was telling me a story of what was going on in his house. And he said there was someone who brokered for his wife, a cleaning lady, and they were charging him $100 a week just for the brokerage, which wasn't a one-time fee. It sounded a little steep, but this fellow was okay. The cleaning lady left, and the woman, the broker, said, I'm still charging you every week $100 because I'm still working on it. Getting this one out for 3 weeks, and this fellow was paying. He was paying $100. Can you believe that? Yeah. And I said, that's outrageous. And he tells me, listen, she must really need the money. You understand? And I said, I want to tell you something. I don't know if it's right or wrong. I think you're encouraging bad behavior because it's just not proper what's going on. Yeah, and this person's becoming emboldened. And I said, let's go ask my father-in-law, Rav Shlomo Miller. And we went to him. We said, is this proper or improper? He said, this doesn't sound very proper. You understand? And he said, so he's like, what should I do? I said, go to Beis Din. He said, you want to, with her, discuss it with a third party. And he's like, who should it be? I said, this child, any third party. You're really good to go. You understand? But that's the thing. So should he be mevater? It really depends on the case. When every person has their inherent biases. Sometimes it's hard to see straight, and you have to acknowledge the biases. So, When there's a shayla and they have a taina, and even if they can't maybe be mitzi mamon in Beis Din, if there is some sort of taina, a person should try to avoid machlekes and try to give in if you can. With the same thought, just to say, Beis Din should close down, I won't stand for that.
Okay. Rabbi Mansour, you want to weigh in?
I want to make a clarification, because when we hear the word vitur, Vitul is not something that's limited, you know, in a bedin. Of course, the question is, should we be mevater? You have a lot of opportunities to be mevater in life. If you're married, you can be mevater every second of your life to your wife.
Yeah.
You know, if you have neighbors, I mean, it's not like you're going to, if the rabbi answers you shouldn't be mevater, then you go, hey, but you did away with a whole chapter in the Tomei Devorah. No, don't worry about it. There's going to be a lot of opportunities for vitul. Even if you're a guy that's going to take every guy that owes your money to Beis Din, and probably Vitul begins at home, and that's probably the more difficult of the yielding than to yield to a stranger. Furthermore, Al Pi Adrash, I'll say that the Gemara says, "Iyov Vatran b'mamoneh hamav," that Iyov is a Vatran with his money. Well, obviously he's a batran with his money. He's not going to give me a batran with somebody else's money. Yeah. And I think that's the point of the Gemara. When it came to a question whose money it is, then Iyov is not a batran. Only once it's established whose mamon it is, and they say, Iyov, it's your mamon. Now I'll be a batran. I'll give it out. I'll give it to Sedakah. But if it's a question whose mamon is it in the first place, doesn't say Iyov is a batran on that. First it had to be mamon, his mamonet. Last but not least, I learned with a Dayan back in Brooklyn for 10 years, Rabbi Hashwal, who was a big Dayan in Brooklyn. And he told me as a Dayan what he finds, and the rabbi obviously knows it better than all of us, okay, you have two tzaddikim that come into court, and the rabbi gives a, you're innocent, you're guilty, you have to pay. He says, you don't know how many enemies I've made, people who will not come to me on Rosh Hashanah to wish me Shana Tova, because I ruled against them in Bedin. Now, why don't you tell the guy, why don't you be mevater on that? Which means to be mevater in a sense to accept the judgment and not have any claims after the case is over. Once the Bedin has ruled, you're innocent, you're guilty. Now you have to yield to your desire to take a revenge against the Dayan, or you have sour grapes against the guy. That also is a... So it's possible to take the guy to Bedin and even win and still be mevater in whatever way, and certainly if you lose, you still have opportunities to be mevater as well.
I think probably have maybe time for like one or two questions, but do you want
to... I think the Rabbanim dealt with that quite
okay, good. Is there any questions from the crowd other than Shimmy?
No. I have a question. You said about being bother on money. What about, I mean, Hashem decides what we make every year?
What is
about
Hashem?
Causes, is it the same terrors that Hashem, nothing will happen to you unless Hashem causes you if you step up, stub your toe, put out all the different money? We still see the same terrors that whatever the din is by...
that we can get our way as far as Hashem causes to happen. Maybe Hashem wants us to broke through. Should we still apply the same answer that you should still pursue the justice that's there?
Again, when there's a clear claim that you have, it seems from Chazanish is saying is that's nichlal in yechiyah v'shtadlis. A person shouldn't be embarrassed by the fact that he's motivated for self-interest. Self-interest is an important motivation. What do you want? Someone else to watch over you? We see by Tzedakah, even though Tzedakah is so wonderful, but the last thing the Rebbeinu Shalom wants is that we nitzrich l'briyus, that we have to come on to other people. Self-interest is an important motivation, and when it's a clear claim that you have, the Chazanish says that's included in your shtadlis to run your mominus. To run your mominus. So that's what he says.
And even though you could live this sort of... you can afford this mammon situation.
It's hard to answer specific questions. I'm trying to give a general formula.
Okay, well, one more question, and it's hard to phrase, so forgive me if I'm saying it wrong, but essentially now you were mentioning before that the world is crazy. It's upside down. You have men who think they're women, women who think they're men, all this crazy stuff. So somebody, you meet someone in your work, and they're so happy that they just had a girl, but you call it a girl, and they say it's not, the gender's not assigned yet, and all this stuff. Like, how are we supposed to be dealing with this? Are we supposed to be, okay, you guys are crazy, move on, or are we supposed to push back and or be happy for them? Rabbi Friedman.
Yeah, Rabbi Friedman, it's your turn.
So rules are rules.
So I would add, when I actually read the original nusach of the question, it included also if somebody comes over and tells you that he just got engaged. Oh, terrific, mazel tov. What's her name? Well, it's not exactly a her, you know. So how do you react? And what's the balance? I think what's the balance between? I don't think there's a balance. I think it's absolutely pasha that in terms of our attitude, our approach, we have to take a completely 100% firm approach. Where there are certain things, there's no wiggle room. There's no giving. There's no leeway. There's no ability to say that, okay, look, you have your lifestyle, I have my lifestyle. Absolutely not. Now, does that mean you come out and you give the guy a frask in the face? No, absolutely not. I don't mean that. I don't mean that you have to be necessarily outspoken. You have to right away raise a flag and say, oh, you know, Lucas, going, this is an abomination. But there shouldn't be any question about the person, about your colleagues and the people in the workplace and your friends and your neighbors, what you hold. I mean, there should be no possibility of them thinking that it is okay with you and you could tolerate it and you're a little bit, you know, you're accepting and you're inclusive. They shouldn't dream of that for a minute, because we're not inclusive when it comes to things that, like as you mentioned, or the thing that I mentioned, we're not inclusive. We're completely exclusive, because the Torah is completely exclusive. And Torah Vat Hashem, you know, many of these... I'm sorry. I wasn't imitating.
I'm sorry.
I'm sorry. all day. So. There's certain things which are clearly listed in the Torah as a to'eva, and that's not going to move, and that's not going to change. And we have to let people understand that that is our approach, and that is the MS, and that is not going to budge in any which way. That doesn't mean, again, that you have to stop putting up banners in the office, etc. But if anyone should think that you are okay with it, or I think part of the question was, do you go to the engagement party? I mean, that's not a question. It's a non-starter, a non-brainer. There's nothing to talk about. But and it has to be, as I said, that people understand that and understand your approach. And it really touched a little bit on what Rabbi Kushner mentioned before about that we're not apologetic about it and we're not awkward about it. As things like this, it's pashut. And I think anybody with will realize that there's an emes and there's a norm and then there's the rest of the world.
I think a lot of the ruach of such questions are because people themselves feel. Maybe it's lacking in their, this is the wrong word, lacking in their pride. And we have to, there's nothing to be unproud about. If you feel in a sense that we are primitive, then you have to work on yourself. That's really what it's not. It's 100%, we should be 100% proud of all these positions.
Don't be apologetic.
And it shouldn't be like, listen, this is what the terrorist said. It's not me, it's him. It shouldn't be like that. This is 100% the truth, and it's right, and we stand behind it. And there's nothing. There should be nothing awkward in our approach to these type of things.
Very good. Shkaya, thank you.
There is lunch in the sukkah for anyone.